You are listening to Blessed and Bossed Up, presented by Anchored Media, an entrepreneurship podcast for Christians all about how to make God the CEO of your business. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, but well-equipped to live and build your destiny His way. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. We're going to do something different this week. It's kind of fun to me because it's a deviation from how we usually do things. And when you've been doing something for this long, I mean, the show has come out weekly for the last almost 10 years. That's 520 weeks of putting out this podcast. And for a long time, we've had 2 episodes a week. So I can't even tell you how many podcast episodes I've done. I don't count. It's a lot of them. And so when we're able to do something different after having so many hundreds and hundreds of shows, I get excited. Usually I will send out an email, typically like quarterly, to solicit questions from you guys for me to answer on the show. And I'm still going to do that. But I thought it would be interesting to see what is my target audience actively searching for online. Because you guys may or may not want to sit and type a message to me, but you may have a question. So I was like, let me see, what are millennial women, may or may not have children, but are Christian entrepreneurs, high achieving, powerful, powerhouse, ambitious women? What are they actively searching for online as it relates to their faith and their entrepreneurship journey? And so I'm going to answer some of those questions. We're going to call this search bar sessions. Isn't that cute? Because these questions are deriving from what you guys are actively searching for online. Because don't nobody know you better than the algorithm, search engines, and those digital cookies that are collected every time you do anything online. And so I thought this would be a cute way to really dive into some of the things that we're actively searching for answers for. So I have 5 questions that I want to answer, and these are like general, but then I got a list of questions because I want to dive deep on specifically women. Because we are analytical, because we are logical, because we get things done, who sometimes have a tendency to intellectualize faith and robs us from the true experience with the Lord that we are meant to have. Those set of questions, those gonna come in another one. These, we're gonna keep them general, but those other ones, stay tuned for part 2 of this. The first question is about technology. It says, should a Christian business owner use AI and automation, or does it lack discernment? I remember a couple of years ago being involved in a ministry, and this was around the time like virtual reality and augmented reality were hot topics, and companies such as Meta were really trying to figure out how to create this metaverse. This was around the time where blockchain and crypto were really popular. NFTs, non-fungible tokens, these digital currencies were really popular. And Meta was trying to create like this metaverse. And the Christian community that I was in at the time would really just talk about how demonic a lot of this new technology was. And I'm not somebody who writes something off as demonic simply because I don't understand it or because it's new and innovative. Now, I think that there are some very reasonable objections to what they were trying to do, especially with like the augmented reality, because somebody putting on a headset and being transported into a whole nother world that they feel is real has some very serious implications from a legal standpoint, from a mental standpoint. Like there was a huge risk as it relates to AR and VR. So I understood to a certain extent how that could be viewed as demonic, but I'm always of the mindset of the enemy can use anything. So just because something is new, just because it's innovative and just because you don't understand it, doesn't mean that you should write it off as demonic. But if there are genuine concerns, I feel like, you know, we should talk about those and just make sure Christians in particular are aware of the ways in which the enemy could pervert something to cause destruction. But nevertheless, that same type of thought process of demonizing technology is now very prevalent as it relates to Christians' use of AI. And we did an episode a while ago where we talked about, I went into detail about like the statistics and how people feel about AI and if people are afraid of it, if they're ready to embrace it. I talked about all the ways in which we may be using it and not even knowing outside of the typical like ChatGPT that you may see. There, AI is being used in so many different ways. I'm actually doing a paper for one of my classes in school right now talking about the civil rights implications of AI and privacy as it relates to the Fourth Amendment. So I'm really excited to dive into that research. But when it comes to Christians, we can often back away from certain technological advancements because we don't understand them. And so this question, I think, is so relevant of should a Christian business owner use AI and automation, because it allows us to face something in truth versus continue to operate in fear or misunderstanding. So to answer this question plainly up front, I'm going to be blunt when I say this. If you are a Christian business owner and you are not using AI or automation, you are being foolish. Period. AI and automation have allowed for service-based businesses, online businesses, to be able to operate in a way that is most efficient than ever before without even compromising accuracy a lot of the times. You are able to reduce so many overhead expenses when it comes to hiring people. Even with technology, there are a lot of tools that do multiple things. Like we've seen all of these individual tools and technology to support businesses pop up. And then we've seen them come together to create these comprehensive platforms that solve multiple problems in one. I remember there was a software when we were working with clients that I used called ClickUp, where it eliminated maybe three or four different technology tools that we were using because this one platform was able to do so many different things. Even one of the sponsors to the show, NetSuite, they have this comprehensive platform that brings so much knowledge from different areas in your business into one platform. Another one of our sponsors here, ShipStation, they bring insight from the different postal services into one platform for you to ship your products and integrate with whatever website or e-commerce site that you may be using. I remember when I used to do research on target audiences for my podcast customers, we used to use Google AdSense that allowed us to do a comprehensive search on what our audience was actively searching for. And we would do these keyword searches so that we could use that to then build, one, the tags that go behind our clients' content, also the type of topics they should be discussing based upon what their target audience was actively searching for. We used that in like our language and the way that we communicated for the clients that increased their discoverability because it focused on the actual consumer behavior of their audience. Now, you could use a platform like Google Gemini, which is backed by the two biggest search engines, Google as well as YouTube, to be able to pull in insights quicker than ever before and for free. When I used to work with assistants, or if I had a virtual assistant that would help do things like organize my email inbox, it was something that would take a lot of time, so I would delegate that task to have somebody else do it. Now, I could use an AI software. If you use Outlook, you could use Copilot. If you have Google Workspace, you use Gemini to summarize my inbox and to categorize it for me. To say, hey, if a speaking request comes in, file it this way. If a question comes in, file it that way. Organize it based on subject matter. And it does all of that for you. You set it. It's automatic. And you just pay whatever it costs for this platform. But this platform also services other areas of your business because, like I said, a lot of them are a lot more comprehensive. Even platforms like Claude or ChatGPT, they have now these co-working or work type of agents that will do a lot of tasks for you. So now you don't need somebody to come and manually update your website or send this email or draft this. The platform can do it for you. You're paying maybe $20 a month on ChatGPT. I forgot how much Claude costs, but either way, it is significantly cheaper than if you were to hire a person. And it may not sit well with you, understandably so, because you may feel like, okay, this is now taking the jobs of people that could be doing this. So now this is impacting their ability to make money. And I hear you. That is a valid concern that a lot of Americans generally have, or people globally generally have, is how is AI going to impact the workforce? But people will adjust. Some industries might be overtaken by AI. Others, you are able to use it in a way that makes your job more efficient. For example, I'm in law school and a lot of lawyers get paid by billable hours. That is never going to be my ministry. To me, the concept of you have to work more to make more is 100% backwards. My goal is to make more and work less, not the other way around. I don't want to be financially incentivized to work more. Absolutely not. So I was never going to do any type of law that requires billable hours. I am a flat fee, flat rate type of girl. But for the type of practices that do have billable hours, the reality is with AI, it shouldn't take you as long to do things. And so customers are going to want you to not be charging them for an hour's worth of your time for something that could be done in 2 seconds on AI. Your time should maybe be put into you, of course, up front, training whatever tool you use to ensure that you're mitigating the risks that come along with it. Your time should be spent with reviewing it after it's already done. But the actual sitting there and typing out the whatever, you don't have to do that anymore. And so a customer is going to be like, well, why is this 3 hours worth of your time when I have AI? So now using the tool, the one that's actually, you know, taking a lot of the manual labor of writing the thing, and then your time is going on the front end of the risk mitigation, on the back end of accuracy checks and all of the best practices of using AI in the legal profession, that time should still, though, be cut in half. And so the billable hour is less justifiable in the age of the advancement of technology. And that's the same for whatever service-based business you may be building. If you are justifying your pricing by telling your customers, I'm charging for my time, in today's age with AI, absolutely not. That's not going to cut it, because consumers know a lot more and they have access to learn a lot more to hold you accountable and to what it is that you're charging. This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Sounds like a good phrase until you actually do the math. For most businesses, shipping is that thing. What is it actually costing you? Because if nobody is questioning that, then it's probably costing way more than it should. ShipStation makes switching easy and savings are immediate. Most businesses are overpaying on shipping without realizing it. ShipStation automatically compares rates across UPS, USPS, and FedEx on every order with savings of up to 90%. ShipStation connects to over 200 online marketplaces and the accounting and CRM tools you're already using. No rebuilding, no disruption. And with built-in returns management, you can even turn returns into revenue without slowing down your team. Over 1 million businesses leveled up their shipping game with ShipStation, with customers reporting scaling fulfillment up to 40 times while cutting costs up to 30%. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code BLESSED. That's ShipStation.com, code BLESSED. ShipStation.com, code BLESSED. Taxes and fees apply. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite. We've been speaking a lot recently about AI and how it's changing everyday work. And that's the exact idea behind NetSuite Next,
the next generation of NetSuite with AI woven into the details your business already relies on. NetSuite Next surfaces insights exactly when you need them, puts agents to work on routine tasks and problems, lets you ask complex questions in plain language, like talking to a knowledgeable colleague. But technology is only part of the story. AI is also reshaping how people and teams work together, and that shift is already underway. That's why we want to put a new expert-created business guide in your hands today. It's called Aligning for the Agentic Era, How AI is Changing Everyday Work. And right now, it's yours absolutely free. Inside, you'll discover how AI could reshape work across your entire organization and how to position your business to prosper from it. If I needed this product, this is exactly what I'd use. If your revenues are at least in the seven figures, get our free business guide, Aligning for the Agentic Era, How AI is Changing Everyday Work, at netsuite.com/blessed. That guide is free to you at netsuite.com/blessed. netsuite.com/blessed.
This episode is brought to you by IXL. Now that the school year is underway, families have a better sense of where your kids may be thriving and where they may need a little extra support. IXL helps to reinforce what they're learning in class and build up their confidence along the way. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. Y'all know I am an IXL advocate. My house, we love it, we use it. My son right now is really into multiplication, and I love that IXL can adjust to his needs and meet him exactly where he's looking to grow and what he's interested in as far as math is concerned. And now that school is underway, we are able to use it to reinforce what they're learning in class, but also gain some confidence in his emerging math skills. And IXL gives that personalized practice. Studies show that students who use IXL perform better academically, with proven results in all 50 states. IXL adapts to every child's level, pace, and learning needs, whether they need more practice on a challenging concept or are ready to keep progressing. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Blessed and Bossed Up listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So going back to, should a Christian business owner use AI and automation? Absolutely. And I say that you're foolish if you don't use it, again, not just because of the opportunity that's there for you to be more efficient, for your overhead to be lower, and for you to be more productive, but also your customers will then be holding you accountable to not taking as long to do things as you may have taken when you're doing them manually, or for not charging as much for your time because it shouldn't take you as much time. So now as a business owner, you have to embrace and understand AI and automation so that you could then justify whatever pricing that you're charging. Saying that I'm charging for my time is not going to cut it. So you need to find something else to charge for if you want to keep charging premium rates. And I think this is great from the consumer standpoint, because now the consumer is requiring more from the service provider. They're requiring more that they can't get from a Google search, from asking chat, asking Claude, or whatever. They're requiring more. And so going back to the business owner side, this also presents opportunity for you to then go and enrich your business in other ways, whether it's getting a new level of education via maybe a degree or certifications or taking classes, connections, relationships will, human in-person relationships will always matter and always be important. So if you are going out and you're making those necessary relationships and connections, that is going to be valuable to those that you serve. So now you're not charging for your time, but you're charging for a new level of expertise, a deeper level of expertise, as well as access to people, information, and relationships that your customer would not have access to. And then in the background, all of the data that keeps you from being able to go out, because I know something that would be frustrating for me is that I wouldn't have time a lot of times to go and do the business development tasks of going to the conferences, going to the different events and networking and all of that. It would be harder to do that because I was so inundated with the back end of the business or the actual work of the business, talking to clients, working on their shows. Sometimes I might step in to edit a show if I need to. So a lot of the behind the screen stuff I would be spending time on, and I will always get frustrated feeling like that's taken away from me going out and being able to do the things that's going to grow the business. But AI provides that opportunity for a lot of the tech stuff to be automated and taken care of, so then you can then go out and focus on building the business. So again, embracing AI, technology, automation, it allows everybody to grow. It allows the business to grow. It allows the customer to be served better and to see more transformation with whatever it is that you're providing them or problem that you're solving for them. And it allows the entrepreneur as an individual to grow. Because as you're going out and growing your business, you're also building your own connections. You're also building your own relationships that will benefit you no matter what you do. The other part of this question I want to emphasize says, or does it lack discernment as it relates to AI? These things are not opposites. As believers, we should be discerning, period. No matter what we do, we should be discerning about what we order from whatever restaurant. We should be discerning about encountering people on the street. We should be discerning about everything. So it doesn't lack discernment to not to use AI, but you should be discerning as you're using it. When you're choosing what technology you're going to use, be discerning. And discerning not only spiritually, but actually look into the things that you're using. If you're using, let's say, some type of tool like Claude or ChatGPT, read their terms and conditions. Read their privacy models. Be discerning to say, hey, this, I don't know where my customer's information is going. So yeah, I'm going to use AI, but I'm going to use it in a way to where there are no personal identifiers when I'm uploading things in there. I'm going to use it in a way to where I understand how their tool operates so that I can then use it in a way that I'm comfortable with. I'm not just using it and doing everything and being oblivious to the risks that are involved. So discernment will let you know, let me read the privacy statements. Let me read what I'm actually consenting to as I'm using these tools. Let me see what they're using or what they're doing with their information or my information that I'm uploading. Something that kills me is like when folks, y'all know if you're on like Facebook or if you're on Facebook, child, every now and then I might pop on to see what Susie from third grade is doing, but I don't be on there. But or like TikTok or whatever, where there are these trends where you're using these tools. You ever see like the little babies that be doing whatever the TikTok dances are because it's some app that you could upload a photo of your child on and it'll show them dancing and people sharing. And it's like, oh, it's so cute. In my mind, I'm like, you're just granting your likeness and your kid's likeness to just anybody. Next thing you know, it's going to be some commercial in China somewhere with your baby over there selling cigarettes or something. And you don't even realize it. You thought it was a cute little trend, but you don't even realize what you just consented to by uploading your likeness to these platforms. Didn't even bother. I know we like to click, I read and understand the terms and conditions. But sometimes with some stuff, you really need to read that those things. And I said one time that something I want to do because I want to talk about on this podcast is go and read some of the terms and conditions and privacy statements specifically on some of these platforms, because I want people to know exactly what they're agreeing to. And I know I could tell you to go read it all day, but I'm going to go grab some of these for myself and I'm going to read them and maybe do a YouTube video so that you fully understand what you're doing. But nevertheless, discernment is a part of everything that we do. And it should definitely be heightened when you are integrating technology because you need to understand what you're agreeing to. So whether you knowingly or unknowingly, you still need to understand. And so again, using this advancement of technology does not lack discernment. You should use discernment as you're integrating it into how you do business. So the next question, and I have a problem with how this is written, but I want to take it as it was given to me because this is how people are searching for it. Is personal branding narcissism or good stewardship of your platform? I said I have a problem with how this is written because I do not like how people take mental health issues, like actual diagnoses, and use them as if they're just like adjectives or something. So, for example, where you're, if somebody is being moody, somebody might say, oh, you acting real bipolar. That is an actual clinical diagnosis that many people struggle with. Let's not just reduce that down to you ain't had your coffee yet. Like, let's not do that. Narcissism is an actual mental health diagnosis that has harmed many of folks. So I just have an issue with it being reduced to like an adjective or a personality trait. So I didn't like that, but I'm reading the questions as I saw them. To answer the question, though, personal branding, in my opinion, is not self-centered. I'm going to use that word instead. I don't believe that personal branding is self-centered. I believe that personal branding is smart and it's strategic, depending on what you're doing. And I also don't think that if you decide to build a personal brand, that automatically means that it's a good steward of your platform either. The decision to build a personal brand, in my opinion, depends on the business that you're building. If you are building a service-based business to where you are providing your expertise to individual clients, a personal brand is necessary, especially in the digital age. Human connection is that much more important. Relationship building, real relationship building, where you're actually talking to the people that you're working with, is that much more important. People are doing it a lot less. And to me, that provides an even greater opportunity for you to prioritize that in your business. Also, as Christians, we're not just providing services. We are also being good shepherds of those that the Lord has sent to us as clients. So having this interaction with your client, in my opinion, a lot of times will have, it will give you a level of discernment and understanding that you may not get if that personal connection wasn't there. Like if I'm having small talk because I'm actually talking to a client on a one-on-one call, and before we hop in, we're having small talk, I might have learned that, oh, her grandmother just died or something. She may not have otherwise told me that. And so now I could send some flowers. I had a client who was having some health challenges, and I sent her some flowers on her surgery day. Small touch, but it's just a way for you to just show kindness and graciousness to people. But nevertheless, if your business is product-based, I don't think a personal brand is necessary because the product should be the star of the show. The product should be this amazing thing that solves a problem for a specific group of people. You can use the personal branding of others to further sell the product. People who have a unique connection to the problem that your product solves, you can use them. So we see that with, of course, influencers. We see that with spokespeople. What comes to mind is Serena Williams and how she's a spokesperson for the online platform Roe, which helps folks get access to GLP-1 medication. And Serena Williams tells her story about how she's this high power athlete, but after having her, does she have more than one kid? I can't remember. But after having her child or children, no matter how much she worked out, she struggled with being able to lose weight. And she talked about like the different complications she had within her pregnancy. And so for somebody like me, that was influential because after I've had my children, I've had 3 kids and 3 C-sections. So my core is shot. Losing weight, I'm busy. I have 3 kids and also a business. And I have, I'm in law school. So I'm very busy. And I found it difficult, one, to find the time to even commit to losing weight as it would be required, like the discipline with calorie counting. Like I didn't have time for that. The level of exercise to make sure that I'm eating less calories than I'm burning. I don't have time for that. And even when I did, because there was a while I had a trainer, I'm working out multiple times a week. I'm putting on muscle, but it was still hard for me to lose weight. So I have even more time constraints now. But even when I did have the time and was doing all the things to lose the weight, it was still hard to do after having kids. And so I identified with Serena Williams' story.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you could wake up tomorrow and be better at one thing, what would it be? For me, I think I would be better at something creative like drawing or painting. Something about just painting and locking into some type of artsy project sounds relaxing. But the reality is, I'm a terrible artist. and the achiever in me would just want to be great at it. And then that kind of just defeats the whole point of relaxing. The point is, better is a feeling defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. It's progress, and it's getting better at, in my opinion, the artsy stuff, painting, drawing. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
This episode is brought to you by Breeze Meds. Everyone's talking about GLP weight loss medication right now. What people don't know is that getting started is so much easier than you think. With Breeze Meds, it's all online, no clinics, no waiting rooms, and it's medically supervised weight loss that actually fits into your life. I have been on a GLP-1 for a few months now, and one of the biggest struggle points when I got started was the hassle to actually get started. Why I recommend Breeze Meds is because they are simple, easy, and that hassle just simply isn't there. It really is a breeze. They're convenient. Your medication ships to your door for free. There's no drama, no clinic visits, no referrals, no subscription. And it's accessible because a licensed provider handles everything online. Medically supervised GLP-1 weight loss, the real deal, all online. You can get started for $199 a month and it ships to your door for free. No subscriptions, no lock-ins, no hidden charges. You simply fill out a form to qualify at breezemeds.com and it takes less than 5 minutes. Get 20% off your first order with code BLESSED at breezemeds.com, BREEZEMEDS.com. That's 20% off, use code BLESSED at BREEZEMEDS.com, breezemeds.com. Code BLESSED for 20% off.
And so that made me think about like, man, maybe I should consider a GLP-1. My mom was on it. My dad was on one. My dad actually has diabetes. So he was using one of them for that, but he lost a lot of weight. My mom was using Zepbound for weight loss. One of my good friends was using one of them and she lost a lot of weight. And she was also having the same problem of not being able to lose the weight despite how much work she was putting in. And so for me, I'm like, okay, all of these personal brands together around a product made me think, well, maybe I should try this so that I could see if it solves my problem. And so I did. I started Zepbound specifically. My mother and I have the same like reactions typically to medication. We have the same allergies and things like that. So once I saw that she did so well on it, I wanted to be on the same one that she was on. So I'm now on Zepbound and I started in March. and it is September. I've lost so far 30 pounds. I am impressed. Y'all, my face look different. I'm going to be recording more videos soon, so you'll see me in real time. But my face is so much slimmer. My waist is in. I'm fitting into pants that I haven't been able to wear for a long time. And my core is an area that is going to take a while for me to get to a place I'm comfortable because three kids, three C-sections. But that is an example of how a personal brand connected to a product made me want to invest in the product. I have no idea, though, who founded Roe. I don't know the personal brand of the scientist or the manufacturing company that creates Zepbound, but the personal brands of those who I'm able to connect to, whether it's from a celebrity like Serena Williams or somebody I have a relationship with in real life, these personal brands attached to the problem that the product solved made me invest in the product. And thankfully, I'm able to see the same results that they did. So I give that example to say, when you have a product, your personal brand is less important. It's the product and how impactful and effective it is to solving a problem. And you can use the personal brands of others to increase sales. Now, personal branding generally, and if it's self-centered, because the reality of today's world is somebody can build a personal brand and that just be that, they are the brand. Whether they're an influencer, a thought leader, or whatever, we've seen time and time again how now influencers are hosts of TV shows and they now have book deals and all of these things that started out by them just building a personal brand. Now, as a believer, the way that you keep your personal brand from being self-centered is by you, in my opinion, being a thought leader. Y'all know how I feel about thought leadership versus content creation. I feel like we need to focus on being a thought leader. By you doing that, it creates a level of distance between you and the brand. So it's still a personal brand because you're still the one talking and writing and presenting the information, but you're presenting not just the details of you and your personality and what you think. You are using those things to push forward a bigger picture or a bigger message. That is the way that this doesn't become self-centered, because now it's not just about you. It's about the thought leadership. And then that thought leadership should come from the Lord and what He's calling you to speak about. And then your personality and all of that just allows that material to be more relatable to the intended audience. For example, one of the things I have on my list that I want to do with YouTube is, y'all know you see the day in a life type of content. I have a formula that the Lord gave me that I have trained on a few times called God Math, the God Math formula, how concentration plus consecration equals multiplication. And how if we focus on the Lord, if we consecrate ourselves and live a life that's set apart and dedicated to Him, He will multiply the things that we do. And so what that looks like in practice, now, if I'm doing a day in the life type of video and I'm showing what it's like to be a mom and a business owner and a law student and all that goes on in my day, because it's quite interesting, I ain't even going to hold you, the way in which my day goes, I'm not doing it just for the sake of showing you what I got going on. I'm doing it to provide an example of how this formula is enacted when you have a busy schedule. For example, I started school, I think it maybe has been 2 weeks now, and I'm a part of an organization on my campus, the Business Law Society, and we had to do all, like, student leaders had to do like a leadership training the first week of school, and I'm sitting in a leadership training, and I was a member of the Christian Law Society at my school last year, and I participated in a couple things, but not a lot, because my first year, I was still getting used to law school. I was postpartum. I lived like an hour plus. Like, I had like a 3-hour commute total each day, so it was just a lot going on for me. But one of the things I was looking forward to this year was being more involved, not in a leadership role, but I just wanted to be involved as a Christian entering into the legal profession. So I'm at the leadership training for my other organization, and I'm looking in the materials they handed out, and I don't see the Christian Legal Society anywhere. So after the training was over, I went to the student affairs folks and I asked them, hey, I don't see the Christian organization on here. I see all the other religious organizations, but I don't see this one. And they were like, yeah, well, the person who was the president this year, she hasn't turned in her documentation, so the organization isn't going to be active. And in that moment, I felt led to say, okay, well, this can't happen. The organization being inactive can't happen. So who's in charge? What has to get done? So they gave me all the information of who the president was and, you know, what she could do to make sure the organization didn't go inactive. But then they also told me, like, well, if you want to lead the organization, you can. And this is what you would have to do to keep it from being inactive. And a friend of mine that I'm in school with, who's also a Christian, she was with me and she was like, you know, if you want to, we could do this together to make sure that the organization remains. So I reached out to the president, told her what they told me, asked if she intend to still have the organization be active and how if she wasn't, I would be willing to step in, just let me know. Initially, she responded and said that she was still going to do it and she was going to get all the requirements done that they needed. Maybe a week or so later, she reached back out to me and was like, hey, I'm actually not going to be able to do it. So if you want to make sure this community stays active, then you can go ahead. So I was like, okay, cool. I reached out to my friend, reached back out to student affairs. We did everything we needed to do within 24 hours. We found an advisor. We made sure we had enough members. All of the things within 24 hours were done. And that is an example. Now, while I definitely did not want no more responsibility at all, like I had no plan on leading any organization, that was an example of consecration, one of the parts of the formula. Living a consecrated life where you're sensitive to the Holy Spirit, you're able to move in real time based upon his nudges. And he will multiply your efforts because us getting all of that done in 24 hours was for sure a multiplication of our efforts. And so when you are building a personal brand and you're creating, so in that instance, if I was recording a day in the life video that day, that would be what the video was about. So yeah, you will see me up early and making my coffee in the morning, packing my lunch, dropping my daughter off at daycare, going to class, studying during my break, picking her up from daycare, cooking dinner for the family, getting all the kids bathed so that my husband can put them to bed while I go back out to my night class. You would have saw all of the busyness that goes on in the day to day, but it wouldn't just be a video about what I'm doing for what I'm doing's sake. The personal branding is about how this God math formula, a unique framework that the Lord gave me, actually plays out in the day to day. And that relieves pressure off of the person that's building the personal brand as well, because you don't feel pressure of feeling like you have to show everything. And that's something I've been very big on from the very beginning, 10 plus years ago of building a brand online, is that I build brands with boundaries. You know that I got 3 kids. You will never see their faces or hear their names on the internet. Never. Because that is a boundary. You know that I am married. You will never, and I'm gonna put an asterisk next to never because God could change this, but you would, as of right now, never hear me and my husband talk about marriage or relationships or any of that sort. That's a topic that I intentionally don't really dive that deep into because this is sacred. I don't want to invite people into that part of my life. And because I keep it about the mission, the message, the thought leadership, nobody expects that from me. But when you build a personal brand just around you and it is self-centered, you're now pressured and tempted into sharing everything about your life. And the audience is going to demand that for you because what else are you offering besides you? So building a personal brand in and of itself is not something that's self-centered. And if you are, though, deciding to build a brand, the way that you keep it from being self-centered is to make it about thought leadership. The next question, how to pitch, close sales, and negotiate high rates without feeling manipulative? I love this question. First, let's talk about the high rates. When I first started in entrepreneurship, man, there was so much talk about you have to charge what you're worth. People will literally come out the gate, brush their teeth one good time, charge you thousands to teach you how to brush your teeth, talking about their charge and their worth. Who said that that is what you're worth? So the first thing we have to address with this question of negotiating high rates is the high rate has to be justified in the first place. And it's understandable as a business owner for you to say, I want to make a certain amount. So you may say, okay, I want to clear, let's say, 10,000, use small numbers. I want to clear 10,000 a month or gross 10,000 a month. I don't want to work with a lot of people because I want to maintain the intimacy of the program. And this, of course, is an example of a service-based business. So I'm going to charge 10 people $1,000 a month for this program. Now, if that is a number that you're comfortable with for your reasons, we have to justify that number. So now you need to figure out what is going to make this program worth $1,000 a month. One of the ways that you do that is you have to understand what other people are charging for that same type of service. You need to do a little market research on what the price is. So if even the most popular, highest level person in your specific niche is charging $200 a month, your likelihood of being able to get people up to $1,000 is a little bit tough. Unless you're able to fully be able to prove and differentiate what makes yours worth that. And you can do that. You can do that by, let's say, bringing on other people. So now instead of them just working with you, they're working with somebody else too. So that then gives them a 2-for-1 and it makes that $1,000 a lot more justifiable. And let's say you don't want to cut into your profit margin. You can have a different agreement with that partner that you bring in. Let's say instead of you paying them per client, y'all have something to where, I don't know, you use one of their services or they get a certain percentage or whatever. You could work out whatever deal that you can negotiate by bringing in that other person. A perfect example, I did this when I was doing my coaching program a couple of years ago. And I was the main coach, but I had my husband, who is a CPA, donate like 4 courses all around like accounting as it relates to business. I've now added a whole nother person with a business license who does accounting and systems and financial systems for government entities and major corporations who's worked for big 4 accounting firms. Come in and provide their expertise. That is access and perspective that folks can't just get anywhere. And because I sleep with them, it was free. I then brought in, though, my lawyer, and I had her donate a class that she had offered before. I can't remember, but it was a class that she already had done that talked about the legal side of business. This is a lawyer, someone with a whole juris doctor who has worked with clients from a legal standpoint, who does this and has so much experience. She donated that class to me for free because when my audience that I'm building needs a lawyer, they couldn't come to me. They still can't come to me till about maybe, 2 years? Give me till like maybe 2028 so I could take the bar and pass it and all of that. But for right now, they couldn't come to me for legal work when they needed their trademarks filed and their contracts reviewed and all of that. So she gave me the class because it was essentially a promotional tool as well for her. So now that she's able to tap into the folks that I'm working with, so it was a mutually beneficial relationship. My audience got more value to justify my rate and I didn't have to pay anything out of pocket. So that those are examples of how you can bring other people in to be able to justify your price. You can also provide other opportunities that other people aren't providing. So do your market research to see how other people are justifying their cost, and then you make sure that you're able to justify your cost being higher. But in my opinion, and this goes on to selling without being manipulative, you should actually solve the problem that you say you solve, and you should have documented evidence of that problem being solved. Something that is a foolproof method for me, anytime I introduce a new service, I never introduce anything at full price that I have not beta tested first to make sure that it is effective. Before I started helping people to grow their podcast, one, I had the success story of Blessed and Bossed Up, but I'm somebody that if you're your only success story, that's not good enough. You need to also be able to show that what you do is duplicable in other people. It's a rap song that's in my head right now, where Jay-Z says, I heard people saying they made Hov. You made Hov. Say, okay, so make another Hov. Like, it's that same mindset of like, you did this once, do it again, if you really did it. And so for you guys who are building your businesses and you want to charge certain rates, you need to show that it is what you're teaching is effective. And that is also going to mitigate risk for your consumer, because they're evaluating, if I pay this money, am I going to get a return on investment? And a way that you demonstrate that, I'm not even talking about selling yet, a way that you simply demonstrate that in everything that you do before you even get to the sale is to show that what you're offering works. So what I would always do is I would have like a beta program first, where I've had friends and folks that I know that I will work on their podcast for them, and I would document the process of what I did, what worked, what didn't work. I will quantify the impact. How much money did they make after working with me? How much did their listenership increase as a result of what I did specifically? And then I put all of that into a format that served as marketing material. So it might be a video testimonial from the folks that I worked with. It'll be case studies. I'm real big on case studies and data, because I like to put, I'm not going to blow smoke. I want you to see the actual facts and the data. I might put together video or whatever format I want to organize this, these results in. I put it all together. So at this point, you're not worrying about being manipulative, because one, you've already proven, one, you qualified. At base minimum, you need to be qualified at what it is that you do. And so your background, your education, your work experience, all of these things contribute to your qualifications. Then you need to show that what you're offering actually works. And you do that through it being proven to work for other people. And so now you have like a lot of your tools to be able to use to market and sell to people. So for me, something that, oh, and I didn't mention this, another foundational aspect of this is you have to know your target audience through and through. You have to know them better than they know themselves. You need to know not just the problem that they have to solve, but their pain points. Why do they need this problem solved? What is the consequence of them not solving this problem? What does life look like for them now? And what does life look like after they hire you to solve their problem? You need to fully understand this. Because then is you're not worrying about being manipulative, but you fully understand the value in what you have to offer. And now you're that much more equipped to go into closing the sale. Another thing that contributes to you being able to close is the process, your sales process. Something that I always did and that worked really well, especially for our Done For You service that we were doing. I always had people, when they signed up for a call with me, one, they had to fill out a form. I needed to know before we got on the phone the details of your pain point. So I knew generally what my target audience pain point was, where they are now, where they're trying to go, all the things I just said. But I also put it in a form because I want them to answer based off of their own perspective to close in any gaps that I might have. And also to make when we have a conversation, it that much more personable to their specific situation. So they filled that out on a form. They also filled out on the form what their budget is, because I'm a believer, like, if you can't afford it, we don't really need to talk. Like, that's not a good use of anybody's time. And then from there, I will always direct people to my pitch. I had like a video presentation where I went over the details of our program. I went over what it entails, what it costs, what they get. I went over success stories, all the data that I had about those that I worked with, what the outcomes was, and all of that. So all of this was in like a pre-recorded presentation that was short. It was no more than like 10, 15 minutes of me explaining the program in detail. And they had to watch this before we got on the phone. So by the time we got on the phone, you are equipped with 95% of your questions answered. You've already seen what I've done for other people. Now I have more detail on you based off of the form that you filled out. So when we talk, we can have a real conversation about moving forward. And my close rate was phenomenal. I closed no less than 80% of the time. And the other 20%, it was like outlier things that may have come up. Maybe I couldn't do something that they needed specifically or wasn't a good fit. Things of that nature are like that other 20%. And by 80, I'm cutting myself short because it's probably closer to 90. But that process allowed, by the time we got on the phone, it was just a genuine conversation of, is this the best fit for each other? Because for me, being a Christian business owner and me working on content and podcasts, I'm not working on any old podcast. Like, if your show is about some foolishness that don't align with my values, I'm not taking you on as a client. Like, that was a very clear line for me. And I was also clear that if any point this content no longer aligns, then we're out. Like, so that's a part of the agreement. So like, all of those details is what we talked about on the phone. But by the time folks got on the phone, they fully knew whether they were ready to work with me or not. It was just a couple things left that we had to discuss. So there was no manipulation involved at all. They had a problem. I have a service who solved that problem. And I showed them why I'm the one that they should hire to solve that problem. And then by the time we got off the phone, deal's done. And we get started on working together. I know sales a lot of times can feel just uncomfortable for folks, which I understand. And I think a mistake that people make a lot of times is they try to automate the closing of the deal. I don't believe in that at all. And I think that goes to discernment when it comes to incorporating AI and technology. Some things a human needs to do. And to, in my opinion, closing a deal is one of them when it comes to things that are high ticket price. I don't know nobody who just going to write a check for whatever is high to them, because high is relative as far as pricing is concerned. Something cannot be expensive to one person that is expensive to the other. So whatever high is for your audience, most of the time, they not finna just put their card information in without talking to somebody first. So that closing of the deal should always be done by a human, and it should always be done, at least initially, by the person that's providing the service. As you grow and get bigger, you can have salespeople and all that. But initially, though, you should be doing it. And I know that it is uncomfortable, but the way that you get comfortable is by doing it. When I first started, even though my background was in marketing and I had like my first job out of undergrad was a sales job. And my job was literally to cold call people all day, selling them something they had no idea that I was calling about, and a product that I most of the time did not care about at all. It was just a client of the company's. All day cold calling people. So I was used to folks hanging up in my face. I was used to folks telling me, don't talk to me no more. I was used to like rejection, because I got a lot of rejection all day long. But even still, when I started my business and I would get on the phone with people, I would still be nervous to say my price. And that's not, like, that is normal. So what I got used to doing is I would say the price and then mute. That's it. Like, I would tell them and I would not say nothing else after that. I'm not over explaining. I'm not trying to get them to get me to come down. Like, I am just going to be quiet. And usually it's fine. And after a while, as you do it more and more, you get more comfortable. But in the beginning, you have to close the deals yourself and you have to just get used to being uncomfortable. But as you continue to grow your business and get more results from more people, it will feel less salesy because you really will be confident in what you have to offer. We're already at the 51-minute mark. I feel like I've given a lot of great insight in this episode. I have about two questions left. I might hold on to those. I might have them in the next episode. We'll see. But let me know what you guys thought of this Search Bar Sessions type of episode. I enjoyed this. I had fun with it. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. I love you guys, and I'll see you in the next one.